presentations of the bills. First, I want to welcome the CEO of the KBS, Mr. Martin Kaskas. We're here to say that we are here when we talk about the legislation that is introduced by the department. I know that in the leadership you have the acting deputy director general, Zipo Ode, who leads the delegation. And sir, welcome. We are going to ask you to introduce your delegation. I know I've mentioned the CEO, but we would want you to introduce the delegation. And thereafter you are going to take us through the presentation. Let me just introduce the what's called the subject for the day. The subject for the day is the initial briefing on the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification Bill and the Standards Bill. Is that correct? That's right. So that is confirmed. Just before you take the floor, I want also to welcome a member, new member in our committee, but he's an old member of Parliament. Since 1994, Mr. Slough, who was in the province. Mr. Slough, Joe Slough, is a member of this committee, an alternate member. Welcome, sir. And you are free to participate during the deliberations. Having done that, welcome all media stakeholders. Thank you very much. Mr. Zikode, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity to present these two bills in front of you. With me here, as the Chair said, I have the President and COO of the South African Bureau of Standards, Mr. Martin Kaskas. I also have Mr. Cliff Johnson, also from SABS. And then from the Department of Trade and Industry, I have with me Dr. Kenga Gemana, who leads the Technical Infrastructure Unit within the DTI. And also have Elsa B. Stein and Anna Marie Rocha from the same unit. Elsa B. Stein, Anna Marie. We are also accompanied by our legal advisor, Mr. Johan Fredo. Johan?
Good morning.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, as you know, our national industrial policy framework provides a guide for the development of local industry and the whole economy. And part of this guide is on how to increase competitiveness of our industry in South Africa. Going hand in hand with that is how we better the regulatory environment and the conformity environment in the economy. As you know, we started some time ago modernizing our technical infrastructure. We presented before you and other structures of Parliament the accreditation for conformity assessment, the calibration, and good laboratory practice act, the measurement unit and measurement practices act on the 1st of May in 2007. all these were enacted as Act of Parliament on the 1st of May this year. Today's presentation will be on the Standard Bill as well as the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification Bill. But these two bills, you know, relate to the South African Bureau of Standards. And as we all know, currently the SABS is responsible for three distinct functions. And these are the standard development, and then the provision of conformity assessment functions, as well as the administration of compulsory specifications. But then here you have one organ of state performing all these three functions. And with all the research that we have done over some period, we have found that there's a little bit of conflict of interest for one organ of state to play a part of a player and a referee. So the reason why we are here, we are trying to separate the function. That's why we are presenting these two bills. So we'll have SABS being responsible for SABS being responsible for one section, and then the regulator responsible for regulating the act. As you will see from the presentation, the SABS has made great strides with the implementation of the recommendations, where it does not require any implementation of the new legislation once in effect. You will therefore see that as with the previous two entities that were presented to you, namely the South African National Accreditation System and the National Metrology Institute of South Africa, NIMSA, the main change will be in terms of the governance and the related structures. The SABS will be reconstituted in terms of the Standard Bill and will remain responsible for the standard development and conformity assessment activity. Then the current regulation division within SABS will be moved out of the SABS and become an independent public entity. This entity will be responsible for the current regulatory functions and will maintain a close relationship with SABS in terms of using the South African National Standards. Well, unless no standard is available. SABS will also be used as a service provider in terms of its conformity assessment services. This will, however, take place on a level playing field with other conformity assessment service providers with the prerequisite of accreditation. As I said, I have with me here Dr. Jenge Demana, who leads the technical infrastructure unit within the Department of Trade and Industry. He will then take us through the presentations, and after that, we'll be able to make the chair. Thank you.
Mr. Shenge, sir, is this Shenge related to Shenge, Mr. Mukele? Is it Shenge? Dr. Shenge, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting DGG. And thank you to the members for giving us the opportunity to present and table these two bills in front of you. I'm going to do one presentation for the two bills, because as we heard from our TDDG, we are referring to one agency. The two bills have already been introduced, Standards Bill and the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. By compulsory specifications, we mean compulsory standards. As you know, some standards are voluntary and others are compulsory. By way of background, the DTI in 2001 did a research review of our current environment in this area. They looked at all the quality standardization issues and found out that they are areas where improvement is needed. So in May 2002, Cabinet approved a project to restructure the whole environment, so that by 2004 we had a policy talking about what we need to do. So these two bills today are essentially the last element of implementing that policy. We have already had two acts passed by Parliament last year, as you heard, and so we are only these two bills will then finalize the process as far as that is concerned. By way of definition, and to just indicate the role of the technical infrastructure in the economy, the technical infrastructure is a system to set standards and to test against those standards, and also accredit those who test or inspect or certify to ensure that they are competent to perform technical measurements. So the important issue here is that this is the work of technical measurement, and the work of technical measurement needs standards. So, and then they need people who are going to ensure that there is conformity to the standards. And those people, their competence has to be from time to time checked, so that they are always on the ball. They always know what they are doing. It is important for the economy to have this system because it provides an objective basis for competitiveness. As you know, quality and standards are inherent to the needs of the supplier. The supplier can only judge whether a product is good or not because it does what it's supposed to do or is of a high quality. It is also critical that we keep our system in good shape, because it is the system that is required to upgrade our economy. Quality requirements and customer safety needs can be met when you have a good system. And also this system allows us to control the dumping of low quality imports in our country that have a tendency of undercutting our industrial productive base. Okay. Now, the reason why we need to keep on modernizing our system is that because of globalization, there's always increasing demand on all trading economies to continue to guarantee that their products are safe and fit for purpose. In addition, for us, with the advent of our industrial policy in the department, upgrading our economy and looking for opportunities to integrate into global supply chain has become very, very important. And that can only be achieved if we have a very good basis in terms of technical measurement. And also, for effectiveness and efficiency, elements of the system require adjustments from time to time so that they can better focus on their work. As you can see today, we are talking about better focusing on regulations and better focus on writing standards and doing testing and inspection. This slide just shows the structure of the South African technical infrastructure system. Okay, we have three agencies that are responsible in this area. The anchor agency is the National Metrology Institute of South Africa. We are calling it NIMSA now. I think SA is missing there. Their work is to calibrate and keep the national measurement system, physical standards essentially. Then we have the SABS, which is responsible for writing standards. Currently, the SABS writes standards, and they also do this conformity assessment, which is the area of testing, inspection, and certification, as well as they act as a regulator. So this, being a regulator and a writer of standards, whereas they are doing testing, is the requirement that we are now separating. We want this regulator to stand alone, to remove the notion of being a referee and a player at the same time. Okay. Then we have the accreditation system that makes sure that everybody who does testing and inspection is actually competent to do that work. They do audits from time to time to make sure that that is happening. The other important issue here is that in both the voluntary sector, the private sector, and the regulated sector, this system is used. So when we are finished with what we are doing, we'll end up having four agencies. We'll have the standards, the metrology, accreditation, and then the regulator. So we'll have four agencies when we're done. The DTI identified the need to reconsider the mandate of the South African Bureau of Standards. As we have seen it from that slide, in terms of the current mandate, the SABS promotes, develop, and maintain national standards. They also do conformity assessment, the testing part, and also administer compulsory certifications, which are compulsory mandatory standards. The current combination of these responsibilities is not in line with the WTO TPT requirements. It also creates a conflict of interest in terms of providing conformity assessment and administering technical regulations. So it gives the notion of being a referee and a player at the same time. Okay, so now we come to the bill. The first bill, the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification. We are creating the bill so that technical regulations and compulsory standards, we're using it interchangeably. There are 70 regulations that covers automotive components, fish, canned meat, electronic and electronic products, and others. This will now be administered by this body that we want to set up. This bill will transfer the administrative elements that are relevant to compulsory certification from the current Standard Act. As you know, we have a Standard Act currently that governs the work of the SABS in general. So the national regulator will, this bill will take over that function as far as it comes to compulsory standards. The new standards bill provides for the continuation of the South African Bureau of Standards as a public entity. So once we remove the division that deals with technical regulation, the SABS that is left behind also needs to be catered for in terms of another act. Hence, we have a standards bill on the table also. The SABS currently has about 6,000 standards. They are mostly voluntary, and this has to continue. They have to continue developing more and more standards. With some of the research that has been done in the department, it seems that for a growing economy, it's good to have about 10,000 standards. So if we want to compete with Brazil and India and China, as we are trying to do, and export a lot of products, we actually need some way to go in terms of having the necessary standards to develop products. So we have about 6,000, and we should be aiming to get about 10,000 in the next few years. Okay. The aim of the national regulator for compulsory certification, we are creating the body, as I've already said, to administer technical regulations. We will transfer all the administrative elements that we have currently to this body. The bill also makes provision for the implementation and administration of all aspects of compulsory certification. This includes approvals, inspections, market surveillance, and sanctions at appropriate level. Obviously, this work is already happening at the SABS currently, so it's going to be transferred, and they will still do market surveillance, which is quite an important part, and they will impose sanctions where people do not comply or where products do not comply. So in terms of what is in the bill, the mandate of the compulsory, of the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification, the body itself, is to promote public safety and consumer protection issues through the enforcement of compulsory minimum standards for the safety and performance of products and services. This is done in order to achieve its mandate. This, in order to achieve its mandate, this body is going to do market surveillance, as I've already talked about. They will sample products for examination. They will take products off the shelf and have those products tested or analyzed by that group, the conformity assessment service provider, the people who do testing, inspection, and so forth. They will also recall products that are not compliant to the regulation as part of their sanction. How this is going to be implemented is that the regulatory division of the SABS will be established as a separate entity. So we are changing the corporate form from being a division of the SAB to being a standalone entity. This new entity will be responsible for the administration. This will be preceded by a project plan that will comprise of costing and effecting this move in terms of personnel implications, separation of human resource functions, patient medical aid, and so forth. And the project plan will ensure that everything in terms of the basic conditions of employment act is adhered to. The way this is going to be done is that between the SABS and the DTI and other similar bodies, we're going to have a project team that will make sure that the transfer happens smoothly. So we'll have a project team to make sure that it happens. So once that has been done, the new landscape will look something like this, that the current regulatory division of the SABS will become the core of the new regulator. We are saying the core because we foresee a situation where more and more government departments will make use of this regulator. Because it's one of the more effective regulators in government as it is. Even as a division of the staff, it's one of the more effective because they spell out what requirements are there to be met to meet the regulations. If regulations are not met, they have the authority to impose sanctions. I think that these are quite critical. Not all the regulations that we have those aspects. This will provide for continuity and for the efficient use of the skills and resources that are currently available at the SAB. The DTI will continue to align this regulator with the new approach to technical regulation. And then the new act, this act will transfer that, I've already said that. The new act will make provision for the implementation, that's true. The new act will cover governance issues as well. So when we come to corporate governance, the Board of Financial Regulator for Compulsory Specification will be the accounting authority. So there will be a new board that will govern the national regulator. The board will consist of not less than 10 and not more than 15 members that are broadly representative of the population of the Republic. We also intend to have the board get assistance from an advisory forum that will provide stakeholder input that the board can consider. The Minister of Trade and Industry is the executive authority as contemplated by Section 52 of the PFMA. The minister will appoint all the board members. In terms of transitional arrangements, the bill provides for the following transitional arrangements from the effective date: that all assets, liability, rights, and obligations of the regulatory department of SABS are transferred to the national regulator for compulsory specification. These are all assets that are in the division, all assets dealing with the current regulator division, not everything of SAB. That all employees of SAB employed in the regulatory department and those that provide administrative support to the NRPS are transferred to the national regulator in terms of Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act. They will be transferred in such a way that their conditions of employment don't get any worse than they are currently. So that all notices, designations, and certificates issued in terms of the Standard Act in respect of any matter dealt with in this Act are deemed to have been issued in terms of this Act, and that all regulations promulgated in terms of the Standard Act in respect of any matter dealt with in this Act are deemed to have been issued in terms of the Act. So this is just to make sure that everything is covered. And as I said, we're going to have a project team that will look at all these issues and make sure that the transfer is transparent and fair for both organizations. Continuing with the transitional arrangement, the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification provides for transitional, including the transfer of all regulator staff and administrative staff responsible for administrative support, as well as the transfer of all assets and liabilities. The bill also provides for the appointment of a chief executive officer and a board. In the interim, the current regulatory divisional director will act as the chief executive officer. The recruitment process for a permanent chief executive officer will commence once the legislative process for the establishment of the regulator has been completed and the board has been established. So we foresee a situation where after the board has been in place for a year or so, they will then decide whether they need a new CEO or not. Okay, so that concludes the part about the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification. So now I'm moving on to the other bill that we have tabled, which is the Standards Bill. The Standards Bill will provide a legal framework for the development, promotion, and maintenance of standards in the public, and the rendering of conformity assessment services and related activities. In a nutshell, what we are saying is that once the regulator has been removed, the remaining staff, SABS, will write standards and maintain standards, and they will as well do the testing, inspection, and certification that they currently do. So they will have a government and a commercial division. The government division being the division where they write standards and maintain standards and maintain international relationships in terms of standards. And then they will have a commercial division where they will continue to do services in terms of testing. The bill provides for the continuation of the Standards Bureau of Standards as the peak national institution for the development, promotion, and maintenance of standards. So the South African Bureau of Standards will remain the national standards body in South Africa. The SABS will continue to be a public entity. The mandate will cover standards development and maintenance and provision of conformity assessment services. The standards bill will be amended by the deletion of current technical regulatory responsibilities. So the work that's related to the regulator will be removed from the new bill. The board of directors will be increased in size as the current board is too small. The current board of the SABS is less than 10. So we would like to have a board that is from 10 to 15 members. In addition, we are proposing an advisory forum that can advise the board on matters of standardization. The mandate of the SABS, the broad mandate of the SABS is to support trade and industrial development by ensuring that South Africa's standardization activities continue to support the needs of industry in a fast-paced global environment. The bill, the standards bill, provides for the maintenance of SABS as an international recognized standardization institution as this is crucial for a well-functioning technical infrastructure. What this means is that we'll continue as government and parliament to fund the SABS to do its work. The bill provides for the development and issuing, promotion, maintenance, and amending of South African national standards and related normative publications, serving the standardization needs of South African communities. The bill also provides for reference material, provision of reference material, conformity assessment services, and related training services in relation to standards, including a voluntary South African Bureau of Standards Mark scheme proving product conformity. The bill, in a nutshell, provides for the SABS continuing with conformity assessment services as they currently do. The bill also provides for the development of procedures through which other bodies with sectoral expertise can be recognized as standards development organizations, and where these standards can be published by the South African Bureau of Standards as South African national standards. There may be situations where another industry body or whoever, another organization, it has expertise in writing standards for a specific sector. So what we are saying is that the SABS will put up a process where if there's somebody like that in the country who can develop a standard for them, they will be able to adopt that standard and adopt it as a South African national standard. Nobody else is allowed to to come up with a standard and call it a South African national standard, except the SABS. So they will have to have a process where they can allow somebody to bring a standard through them, and through them they can then call it a South African national standard. So if there are cases where somebody is good in a specific sector and they want to write a standard, they have to, the SABS will lay out a process, a transparent process where anybody can see this is what I need to meet before my standards will become a national standard. And when it does that, it will be published and distributed through the SABS. Okay, moving forward. We are also making provision in the bill for obtaining membership in international, regional, and foreign bodies that have objects similar to object of the South African Bureau of Standards, SABS. So they will continue to be members to various international organizations. We will be asking the SABS to put up a process where they will make sure that the expertise that they have is maintained and kept at an acceptable level. I think this talks to HR development, that with the new bill, it will be, the onus will be on the SABS to make sure that they actually have the skills that they require to do their work at all times. The SABS will continue to coordinate and interact with other international and regional bodies that deal with standardization issues. The bill provides for the provision of information services to deal with inquiries about standards, handle the sale and distribution of South African national standards and related publications, as well as similar publications for international and regional or foreign bodies. The bill will also provide that the SABS will continue to be the inquiry point for the WTO. As we know, the South African Bureau of Standards is the inquiry point when it comes to technical issues that deal with technical barriers to trade for the WTO, in the sense that they notify and they get notices from the WTO on any technical barriers to trade that other countries put in place. So in the case where a country that we are interested in put up a compulsory standard that everybody who enters their market has to meet, every product that enters their market has to meet, the SABS knows beforehand, it's notified, and that So we will keep the system in place, Mr. Chairman. In terms of transitional arrangements for the SABS, I think what we're saying is that they will continue as they are for until the board changes. The CEO and all other employees of the SABS, except the employees employed in the regulatory department of the SABS, remain employees of the new SABS, the reconstituted SABS. All assets, liabilities, and rights and obligations remain the responsibilities of the SABS. The continuation of all notices, designations, certificates, and regulations issued in terms of the Standard Act, and then the continuation of the SABS Council till the end of its term.
Okay.
So the employees and everything else will continue, including the board of directors of the SABS will continue until its term ends. The Board of the South African Bureau of Standards will be the accounting authority as contemplated in the PFMA. The board consists of, the board will have to increase in size, as I have already said. The minister is the executive authority and he will appoint all the members of the board as is currently done. Continuing with translational arrangements. I think it's a repeat. The CEO and all other liabilities, we have discussed this. Okay, the bill provides for the minister appointing the board, as is being done currently. The current board was appointed on 1 August 2006, so they have until 2009, because the board has a period of 3 years before the period. Okay, so with the two bills, what we have done is we had to do a lot of consultation with other government departments. These are the stakeholders that we have consulted. We worked with National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration. We consulted the Department of Labor, Transport, Agriculture, Housing, Health, Environment and Tourism, Minerals and Energy, Science and Technology, local and provincial governments, and also the president. We have also worked with the other agencies in the technical infrastructure field, that is the National Meteorology the National Meteorology Institute of South Africa, NIMSA, and the South African National Accreditation System. We have also had industry consultations. We have taken our policy and our bills through the NEDLAC process. Thank you.
Dr. Demana, thank you very much. Next. Mrs. Gode, I don't know whether you have a closing remarks on the presentation. Okay, thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Demana. Now we revert back to members to raise questions, comments. I noticed that today DA is conspicuous by its absence. Not only DA, the IFP is here. The IFP is here, I'm happy. The ISP should always be here, yes. the VA is not here. The AMC is. Okay. Okay, the first question, let me start from the chair. First question from me would be, in the current situation, what are your challenges, you know, in the way that the SABS is structured with the regulator? Are there any challenges?
and what are those challenges? You know, and the reason why you had to see. I've noticed that you have actually indicated in your presentation something to do with WTO standards. It does not fit in with WTO standards. And the question would be, would it be everything that does not fit in with WTO standards, but it suits us as South Africans, then have to be changed? Yeah. And what is this, or the two bills, what are they intended to do or to contribute towards transformation of our country? Are there any elements or factors that meet with the transformation agenda of the country? That is the first question, or first two questions. So, is there any other question from the members? Mrs. Lause.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe linked to the very question, I think it's on page 3 of the hard copy of that presentation. There is reference to TBT. I'm not sure what TBT stands for. But also just a little bit elaboration around these requirements referred to the TBT and WTO requirements, that we are not really dealing things, meeting them, or that the current combination of responsibilities is not in line with. The second question is, reference is made to standards. Voluntary and compulsory standards. What is the criteria used to determine the difference between voluntary and compulsory? I think I'll leave it at there for now. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Slough. Comrade Lamadim.
Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. And my just a comment would be that I think it is well taken that the parties have been consulted, because I'm not going to be myself, I think, question. But then on page 4, under A of the NRC bill, bullet number 4, this includes approvals, inspections, and market surveillance, as well as sanctions at appropriate levels in order to deter abuse of regulations. No, Chair. I'm not sure to what extent have we been able to establish mechanisms that will be able to ensure that these are well catered for in terms of monitoring, because especially in terms of inspection, if you can just share with us what type of mechanisms are in place to ensure that these regulations are complied.
Thank you, Kuri Ramudive. Is there any other taker from the members? Before we raise other questions, let's again add some other questions from the chair. Perhaps member Lawen, Honorable Ramudive, yes. They have sharpened something from my side. The accreditation, who's going to be responsible for accreditation of these other organizations, that the mushrooming and so on, and claiming expertise on several standards and so on. Is it SANAS or who? And what tool do they use to actually make sure that such organizations are really, they have competency in assessing or testing standards? Right? On page 4, the first slide, you have indicated that standard H, what is this? In reference to specification from the current standard H to the new national regulator. No, just leave that one. It's not a question. The project team, can you talk to this project team that is going to ensure the implementation? Where is this project team and how is it going to be formed? Is it going to be formed or is it there? And who is going to comprise this project team? The page 6, you spoken about the new approach to technical regulations. What is this new approach? How does it differ with the current trend? But I don't know whether you call it the current or the old approach. Which would be the old or the current approach and the new approach? Let's talk to that. The expansion of the board for SABS, what really motivates that? Is it the number? Or is it the requirements or the challenges of the work? Or just the number, just because they are less than 10? Now let's increase it to 15. Your consultation, in addition to Honorable Ramudive's question, your consultation, you indicated that industry and other interested parties, who are these? Presented to us that you have consulted in-house government, all the entities within government. You don't tell us that you have gone out except to say that it is the industry that we have spoken to. Which industry? And what are the organizations? Private sector, non-governmental organizations, COSATU, etc. You know, without mentioning names. At least we need to have just a glimpse of what happened during the consultation.
Thank you very much.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Demana will answer some questions, and I think from other members of the team, I also have to come. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. It's a substantial list of questions that we have. Starting with the question about the challenges that the current environment faces, I must try to answer it in terms of transformation of our country. The fact that the SABS, right standards, do testing, and also approve the test as a regulator, approve that the product has been tested correctly and therefore it conforms with the regulation. The compulsory standard is a regulation, so it conforms with the regulation. It's problematic. It's problematic in the sense that for a new entrant, it's very difficult to break in because the SABS is already in the whole, they're working in the whole value chain. So if you want to come in as a tester, it's difficult for you to come in, I'll say. So the playing field is not as level, because other people who want to do this work don't have the ability to write their own standards and test it and approve it at the same time. So the impression that is created in the marketplace, it doesn't matter whether it's real or not, is that this area is difficult to get in because the system has already been locked up by the South African Bureau of Standards. So it doesn't allow South Africa to actually come up with a number of service providers in the testing, inspection, and certification fields. You have to be a big player already before you will want to challenge. If you're a small player, you can only specialize in one niche area, you will feel it's not worth it because these guys will always outcompete me because they have the system locked up. So that is a problem in itself. In terms of best practice, when we compare to other countries, there's very few countries that are trading, that do export a lot of products, that have a system like ours, where you have the standards body acting as a regulator at the same time. So the standards body in most countries write standards, and they have commercial services of testing, but they don't act as a regulator. So in terms of best practice, well, we are also not comparable to our trading partners. In terms of WTO requirements, there is a guide for standards writing bodies that these are best practice for them, which also doesn't include the issue of being a regulator. Regulators use standards, but they are not the standards bodies. So we are not meeting all that. Hence, we see that there is a problem. There's also the DCI now and then gets a number of industry players complaining that the South African Bureau of Standards, because they write standards, are writing standards and taking standards that should not be compulsory and making them compulsory so that they can generate income, because it all comes back to them. But you know, we don't actually have hard evidence that happens, but we get complaints. So which shows that actually the playing field is not as level as it should be. Okay, so I move from that one. The TBT definition. TBT stands for technical barriers to trade. Technical barriers to trade are standards, quality issues, and then compulsory standards, which we call technical regulations. So yeah, those are the things that they can be put in place by different countries so that they can exclude products from other countries. That's why there are barriers to trade. So a country can require that you meet something to do with climate change and make it compulsory, that every product that comes into their country must meet this requirement of climate change. So it's a technical barrier to trade, because somebody must go and test and measure and say, yes, it does or it doesn't. Okay, we talked about that. Voluntary standards and mandatory standards. What's the difference? I think the SABS, since they're here, they will explain that much more clearly. The mandatory or compulsory standards are the standards that the regulator or government say that every product must meet. So every product in the market must meet. What is the good example? A good example would be the brake fluid that we use in our cars. There is a compulsory specification or a compulsory standard that every brake fluid that is sold must meet that standard. The reason there is such a standard is because braking is a safety critical issue. So if you don't have the right brake fluid, your car may not brake, and that might be a problem. So people can get injured. So in the area of health, safety, and environment, government is allowed to come up with compulsory standards. So our standards in the compulsory area address those issues, safety, health, and environment. So brake fluid is one. Fish. fish have to meet the compulsory standards before they are put on the shelf also, because we know if fish is not good enough, people can die, so it's problematic. Then also in the environment, the amount of pollution or gases, pollution you can put in water, the amount, there are substances that if they are released from industry into water, for instance, we can die when we drink the water. So there is compulsory standards, say you cannot exceed this limit.
Okay.
So, and then the voluntary standards are standards that industry, different industry associations agree that in their industry, in their sector, this is best practice. So everybody who trades in this sector must meet this kind of practice. I think one good example is, although it's not really a standard, it's a code of practice, management system, the ISO 9001. That I think most people know about the ISO 9001. It's not compulsory that a company must have it, but some customers of different companies won't buy from you if you are not, you don't adhere to the 9001 standard. So in that sense, it's not compulsory because it's not required by government, but it might be compulsory because it's required by other companies in the sector. So the difference really between mandate, compulsory and voluntary, it's only compulsory when government says it, so it must be met. If industry says it must be met, it's still voluntary. Deterring abuse of regulation. Currently, what is done to deter abuse, it's the sanctions part. I don't know if I understood the question correctly, but we have sanctions. If products don't meet the requirement, if you have brake fluids that don't meet the requirement, what the SABS does is in their market surveillance, the regulatory division, they will get the product, take it off the shelf, take it to a lab laboratory, get it tested, and they realize it doesn't meet the requirement, and they will ask you to recall all the products that you have. So you have to take them out. If you imported the product, it has to come back to the to a warehouse, and it can be destroyed or it can be sent back to where you got it from. And this is very important because I think we know about cases like Choice that came from various countries that are not fit for kids to play with and all that, that have been recalled in the USA, for instance. So, it's important for us also that we have this. We have sanctions that we can impose. If the data, if something doesn't comply, and then you have data that shows that it complies, and that data has been fraudulently obtained, then that's a criminal case, essentially. So the police then will be called in. So that again, it assists. The accreditation process also assists in that way, that if somebody is testing or inspecting, it's accredited, and they lie, then they have contravened the Accreditation Act, so they can also be taken to court. So, yeah, there are various checks and balances to ensure that there's no abuse. But criminal activities do happen, even when they are deterrent. Accreditation of other organizations. The accreditation for doing testing, inspection, and certification is done by SANA. If you write standards and you want those standards to become national standards, the SABS is going to come up with a process. That process is not in place yet, but once the Act comes into effect, they will come up with a process where they outline how that should be done. So I don't think that should be a standard thing. Project team, who are the members of the project team? The project team will have DTI, National Treasury, Public Service and Administration, South African National Accreditation System, National Metrology Institute of South Africa, Department of Transport, Department of Labor, South African Bureau of Standards, the SABS, and industry. We'll have two representatives from various sectors, various industry associations on that team, as the project team. The new approach to technical regulation. Okay. In the review that we did in 2001, we found that the way that South Africa approaches technical regulations is quite fragmented. There are various gaps and there are overlaps in some areas. So we have, the department has come up with a strategy to, or an approach to technical regulations that they are still trying to get buy-in for. In the old approach is such that the way that trade and industry comes up with technical regulations is use standards. Other departments can refer to standards or they can make their own technical regulations. So in the technical regulation, they will say, these are the specifications that you have to meet for your product to be sold. That in itself is problematic because it's very difficult, unless you are already a player in the field, to know about that compulsory standard. And you find that in most cases, that standard will say nothing about the section if you don't meet the requirement. And it will also say nothing about what do you have to do to prove that you comply. So the new approach will have four elements. It will talk about who is the regulator, who is the person who is going to enforce the standard, and then it will say, what do you have to do to meet the standard? Then it will also say, what will happen to you if you don't meet the standard? What kind of sanctions are going to be there? And it will be based on a standard. So those are the four elements of the new approach to technical regulation that we are referring to. The only thing is that I think once we have buy-in as a department from government, because this has to be to apply to government as a whole, national, provincial, and local. And local government. Once we have that buy-in, then we'll come to the portfolio committee to present the policy or the approach as such. Expansion of the board of the SEBS. Maybe the SEBS can come in here. it's really the increasing scope of the work that the South African Bureau of Standards does. What we are looking at is that in the new board, there should be sectoral representation. Currently, the board is not; it doesn't take into account which sectors the board members come from. So, because government has prioritized specific sectors in terms of GISA and industrial policy. We will want the agencies to also prioritize those sectors. And to do so, they need board members who understand those sectors. So that's why we think the board will have to increase in size so we can accommodate those specialist skills. Consultations. Yes, we did government consultations. We consulted industry. For the private sector, we had a few workshops. We had a few workshops with industry. Where did we have it? Is that Pretoria or? we had a few workshops in around Pretoria, but we invited the industry association to those workshops. So we consulted industry. Labor and was consulted through the NEDLAC process, because we also had to go to NEDLAC, where business and labor and NGOs are supposed to be participants. I think that's about it in terms of consulting. I think anything that I didn't answer, I can specifically come in. I think my machine will come in there.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Lemano. Chairperson, let me just make one or two small additions. in relation to what are the challenges transformational. I think one needs to understand that the South African Bureau of Standards Conformity Assessment Division, where testing, certification and training is currently taking place, can be perceived to be anti-competitive because it's got a captive audience at the moment where its close proximity to the regulator can be perceived to be anti-competitive. And this is just by the market as a whole, And this will level the playing fields. So if there is a agreed set of criteria which the regulator issues in terms of who will qualify to provide conformity assessment services to the regulator, the playing field will level. And in many respects, some of these activities are lot leaders to the South African Bureau of Standards because the volumes are simply so small, and you will open up new niche opportunities for small players to enter that market space. But also, one needs to understand there are private players at the moment. It's not that you're monopolistic. And a lot of that, some of the work are already contracted out to private players. But this will kill this whole notion of an anti-competitive, and it will also encourage enterprise development in the country, where new players can emerge to respond to some of our new regulatory needs. But one also, it will be an opportunity amiss if I don't address this notion that we write standards to generate income, the perception raised by Dr. Demani. The standards process is as such that that can't even happen. Firstly, we don't chair those committees, we just facilitate the process. The process is a consensus process consisting out of industry players, government, consumer bodies, and so on. And they have a long-term view as to what's happening in the industry, what's happening internationally. And we can't just write standards because we're going to make a few bucks out of it. It's more about what society's needs are. And some of the nice standards that came out was responses to society's needs. We've just published 16002. HIV/AIDS management. It's a societal issue. It's not a money-making thing. There's a big one after this big accident, the unfortunate situation where the president was almost, the tent almost fell on the president and the thing. We wrote a standard recently how on big events should be organized in anticipation of the World Cup and all. So these things are not profit-driven stuff. These things are responses to real and meaningful issues out there in society that needs to be standardized in terms of good practices, in terms of specifications and those type of things. I must allow the voluntary and compulsory, I just also want to make a small addition there to say that the state has a responsibility where market failure is evident to intervene. And market failures can happen in relation to environmental threats to our community. The state can't leave it to the invisible hand of the market. And hence, though a standard might be there in a voluntary position, the state might prefer that this comes by a legislative process through a regulation compulsory so that we can then deal with sustainability issues and don't just leave it to the invisible hand of the market. Hence this difference between voluntary, which was consensus based, and compulsory, where the state needs to intervene to protect society against any market failure there. And the critical consideration here, what's in the best interest of society? And that sometimes can market forces being market forces, as it were, can sometimes militate between the state's role to be the guardian of society, the state's role to protect society where society is vulnerable. And as where the environmental issues, health and safety, those type of things are concerned, the state has the responsibility to intervene through compulsory specification. There was also this example, Honorable Ramadire What monitoring mechanisms are in place to ensure that regulations are compliant with? We've just undertaken a major blitz in the electrotechnical industry, where because there's such a major infrastructure boom in the country, a lot of electrical goods being procured, where we got ministerial approval, because the route is fairly simple. We don't want to be confrontational. Our inspectors go out there, do surveillance, they pick up that you don't comply with the spec, they validate it through a test, and after that, I then sign a restraint of trade that you can't trade until you've corrected it. If they can't correct it, we go a step further and ask for ministerial intervention for those goods to be destroyed. And we're quite ruthless on these things. The other day, we destroyed 17 million rand of cables, of electrical cable. I'm not at liberty to discuss the name here public, but just to show how firm we can be in these things, because, you know, these things look fairly innocent, but a small deviation from the original spec. Tomorrow, we might have a situation where buildings burn up, where buildings can collapse and things like that, and the extra vigilance. And I think this new regulatory division, as new regulations evolve, what is currently lacking is the teeth, for lack of a better word, you know, the enforcement. Well, it's not so firm as we would like it to be. Because I write a letter and say, you don't trade. Tomorrow I come back. The other day, what is this thing? Paraffin stoves, right? When that became compulsory. The gentleman said, can't we take it to Botswana? I mean, no, once it gets to Botswana, it will find its way back into South Africa. Okay. So we need to have the teeth to destroy these things, do away with it, and protect our people against these things. The question was raised as to the accreditation of other organizations. We have SANAS here, but all the laboratories also, there's an international guide, the ISO guide, 17025. There's an international guide. Anybody who wants to operate in a conformity assessment environment needs to subscribe to that international guide. And that's going to be the criteria for all of us. SAVs, on an annual basis, we must subject ourselves to that check, and so will every player to that ISO guide. But then the IEC also got a CBS guide. Different one, more for electrotechnical, international one for electrotechnical stuff. The jury is still out, how big should the board be? And it's an area which I don't want to encroach on. Currently the board is functional. There might be need for one or two reinforcements, but as to whether size counts, that's the minister's comment.
So as it appears in the bill, the issue of size, it won't be only for the minister. It is going to be our responsibility here to look at that together with the department, or if the minister would want to appear before the committee, perhaps he would have to come and make a presentation. But I think we are not just going to leave it.
Chairperson, maybe if I could come in, what we did when we discussed the issue of board size is we actually consulted with on corporate governance. And we've looked at some of the guidelines in terms of the corporate governance protocol and the King. And we've looked at that and to get some guidance around the size of a board. And that is where we kind of got the guidance that, you know, a board, too small a board with six or seven people, with a big organization such as the regulator and with the staff, the current board is too small. And I think our minister's view is also that what he wants to do is he wants a good board where he can get representation, because, you know, which is very important, but he also wants to give opportunity to sometimes to new people that have not had the opportunity to get board experience. Because what we found is the group of people available for board in the country is so small. So that is also one of these things that we think if we can make the board a little bit bigger, we can bring new people in that may not have the experience yet, but that can gain that, and then you could pop, you know, then your pool of let me say directors becomes a little bit bigger.
Mr. Squatch, are you done, sir? Done, folks. Comrade Maja? Comrade Mike?
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I'm having a bit of flu. But just to be educated, I wanted to understand the standards in terms of ISO as opposed to national standards and the TBT that would be individual countries trying to come up with barriers. How do you work that one out? My question might not be well structured, but the European countries will try and come up with standards because they are highly developed. They can come up with gadgets that would take a millimeter, up to a thousandth of a millimeter, which we can't do ourselves, in order to create barriers for us here. And there's a threat of us using those standards nationally for our own industries. I just want to be educated when it comes to that. And one other question will be in terms of, you said the board will need an advisory forum. According to me, it has been existing for a very long time. I understand you concentrate on, you focus on specific sectors. But it has been in existence for a very long time, and it never had an advisory forum. I'm not very sure why now do they need an advisory forum. Maybe some job creation. Thank you very much, Comrade Chair.
Thanks, Comrade Mike. Are we done from the members? One, two, it goes. Three. Oh, it seems we're done. ISO and technical barriers to trade and all those other questions. Mr. Zukoda, over to your team.
I'll field the ISO and TBT question. This is actually a very big topic which will keep us here all day. I'm going to try and reduce it to a minute. Basically, ISO is the one of a number of international standards bodies of which SAVS is a member. And as a member, we are entitled to participate on any technical committee that develops an international standard that we choose to be on. We decide whether we wish to be a member and at what level we wish to participate. This gives us the opportunity to influence that international standard together with our counterparts, and ISO has something like 140 countries, so the vast majority of the country members are in fact developing countries, to influence those international standards so that they are not too tight, that they are not so restrictive that we cannot export our products. This is where the TBT comes in, but before I get to that, there is no obligation on South Africa that we must adopt those standards. The TBT, Technical Barriers to Trade Agreement of the World Trade Organization, would like us to do so wherever it makes sense to do so. But the national standards that we issue here may or may not be identical to the international standards. We take the international standard as a starting point, the committee does, and decides whether or not we can meet it. if we can't, we make a deviation. We're allowed to do that in terms of both the ISO and the World Trade Organization rules. So we decide what standards apply here. However, the technical barriers to trade agreement does say that if you deviate from the international standard, you should have good reasons to do so. Countries like Europe have less good reasons to deviate than we have. So there's a very strong obligation on regions like Europe to adopt the international standard without modification. And to an increasing degree in recent years, that is what's been happening. Europe has been aligning itself with the ISO and other international standards. So the process is working in our favor, and we can make as much of it as we wish. If we wish to influence it, we simply have to get involved in those technical committees. That's where the difficulty comes in, because to get the people with the technical expertise in this country to go to those international meetings, and there's lots of them, is where we have difficulties. But in essence, the door is open for us to influence to the greatest possible extent.
Yeah, just on that question, maybe may have punched more. There's an issue of a developing country, which we are. And we have the developed countries approach. We choose not to adopt certain standards because of our practical situation domestically. And how far does that inhibit us, you know, in terms of exporting our goods? Because that also could work as, you know, against us in terms of barrier to trade, technical barrier to trade. So, and our participation in ISO, the teams or the team, or our house within the SABS, how far is it attuned to the issue of transformation when we participate today? You know, because it talks about the whole developing world vis-a-vis developed world. So it raises many issues. Can you just, if there's anything that we can raise there, because those people that are participating there must be actually well attuned about issues of developing countries and vis-a-vis in relation to technical barrier to trade as well.
The answer to that is that standards, the local standards that we have, are a double-edged sword. And if we choose to deviate from international standards, that might be beneficial to our country, or it might not. And that depends on case-by-case basis in industry. If we deviate, we would probably tend to protect local industry against imports, but equally, we would probably reduce the possibilities of exports. And that might be good in certain areas. In other areas, that's a hopeless strategy. So each one has to be looked at on its own. The local committee that deals with South African standards is a broadly based, all stakeholders present committee. It's an open area. If any group that wishes to join that group, they are welcome to join it. They make decisions by consensus, and they decide on the local standard. They also decide on the position that South Africa takes when it sends a delegate across to one of these international meetings. We try as far as possible to use a member of the committee to attend those meetings and not SABS officials, but it doesn't matter. Whoever goes there goes with the mandate of that consensus group, who've decided which is the most effective way of driving the standard from South Africa's viewpoint. So there is, again, the opportunity for that wide-based, broad-based input into the process and the way it influences international standards. Maybe you would like to go beyond that.
I think the issue, the question raised on transformation is quite a challenging one. We're currently having in excess of 350 South African experts that participate in all our technical committees. And, participate internationally, 350 South African experts. And these are men and women who volunteer from industry, from the consumer movement, from government, to make sure that the South African position is properly conceptualized and properly articulated internationally. The challenge is, how do we broaden that stakeholder base and make sure that the value of standardization is appreciated? We just had a major convention last week, Wednesday, in an attempt to broaden the stakeholder base. We need to make sure that even at the level, and it's something that we're going to pursue this year, even at the level of the tertiary institutions, where your future decision makers are coming from, your engineering students, your business school students, and so on, we need to sensitize them very earlier on in their careers, before their careers actually launch off, to have a depth and understanding of the standardization process. Jefferson, this year at the ISO General Assembly, it was the first year where an academic award was made, and the endowment came from just the Japanese counterparts. And guess who won that award? It was the University of Zhuangzhou, from southern China. That university has set up a special program, a postgraduate diploma in standardization, which means if the engineers pass, they can do that. Their first bunch of graduates, there's Dr. Damana, he was with me when the award was made known, was 1,240 graduates, the first batch that came out. Those people are now fully integrated in the Chinese industry. That's how serious they take standardization. And we've got to have a serious rethink in South Africa. If the transformational agenda, where we broaden the stakeholder base, because, some of the older committee members, the institutional memory is going to get lost. And we need to get as much people into the system, fully equipped to hold their own in these technical committees. And just for the record, our current national chairperson, for the IEC is Mr. Tembani Bakula. Very transformational in nature.
Okay, thanks. Are we done with the other questions?
Okay, what we want to achieve with the advisory forum is to create a forum where the board of staff would listen to the stakeholders, where the stakeholders may say, listen, we need a standard for this business process outsourcing. So it's a process of including stakeholders that have a voice, not just a voice at the level of maybe taking part in technical committees, but also having an opportunity to engage with the board once a year through a process where they will come and say, this is the kind of things that we would want to see the staff doing. You would see it's an advisory role. It's not, they would not prescribe staff. And it's like a general meeting. When you look at companies, they often have once a year, they have a general meeting. So that is what we had in mind with this. We do believe increasingly it's important to talk to stakeholders, to give them an opportunity to talk. We followed the same approach. If you remember last year when we passed the accreditation, or when we brought the accreditation bill and the metrology bill, they also made provisions for these advisory forums
where stakeholders come you know, give some their input into the process. And we believe it's a way of also, you know, getting people to understand what SAS is about and keep educating and keep reinforcing how one can use standards and how important it is in the society. I would also like to say that one of the things Martin touched on, skills, we're currently working on a new, you know, our next phase for our technical infrastructure institutions. A key element of that would be a skills, you know, we would need to sit together and talk about skills development. And I think there's some good ideas already on the table. The institutions have thought about it. We want also to maybe look at the institutions, SANA, NMI, and SAS, working together with universities and things like that. So we've started that discussion. There's also the issue of what we do in our trade agreements. When we negotiate trade agreements, we also try to include GDT chapters in those agreements. So that if we run into trouble with technical barriers to trade, and you may suspect that technical barrier to trade is unfair, because you know, most of them are fair, you can prove that you need them, that we have an opportunity to either comply with them through understanding what is the requirement, or to start to talk about, you know, why do you really have this requirement? So I think it's important that we note that these TV chapters are included. I think increasingly technical barriers to trade are the next important thing. It's not just technical regulations. You know, there are other administrative things as well that becomes a technical barrier to trade. As we move away from tariffs, this is the next big challenge, and anybody that you talk to would confirm that. Thank you.
Just a small addition to this industry advisory forums. I think currently that arrangement exists in SAS. We've got industry advisory boards, but it's not institutionalized and it's not linked to the board, the council of SAS. We've got a mining one, we've got one on electrotech, we've got one in transportation, the consumer one was recently launched. And one wants to institutionalize these things because the very object that the Bow and Versace is currently taking place. These people are talking about what's happening in the industry, how standardization process should respond to it, but it's not institutionalized the way they act in Versace. And it is important to broaden that level of participation. And perhaps not job creation notion, it's just, you know, to make it as participatory as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Scott and the big team. If we're done, members, I think... Oh, there's one question. I think that's going to be the last batch of questions now, because this is only the initial briefing. We've still got a long way to go with the bills. Go ahead, Mikey.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Well, just a small Ayana question. I can't stop thinking about the way, say, European countries or the European Union is treating us as South Africa in terms of standards. We might be doing the same as South Africa to Burundi, it's possible. Making the technical barriers very difficult for them. And I can't imagine maybe Lesotho, how they relate to the European Union on their own. I mean, I just want to have an idea. I've been trying to crack my head thinking about that. Or we might be horrible on Burundi and Rwanda ourselves. Thank you very much.
Let me put Oliver Marcus' mind at ease. We're very friendly. As I'm talking to you now, for the next 3 years, we signed an agreement with Namibia they've entrusted 34% of their GDP into the hands of South Africa. We're doing all the official inspections for them. We've just successfully made them compliant with EU requirements last year. And the new arrangement, which I signed last year with the Permanent Secretary out in Namibia, is to make sure that in 3 years' time, Namibia will be in a position to have its own National Standards Institute with a whole range of the standardization activities in place. And we host virtually on a monthly basis the new CEO of Swaziland was here the other day, Botswana. We're doing training. Also being them in Sadakistan are doing harmonization of standards. How many 60 acres passed recently to make sure that even the cement from Zimbabwe find its way in South Africa without any hassles. So that in anticipation of this free trade area for SADC, there's already substantive work done on some of the major standards. I can assure you we try our best to.
Okay, maybe just to say, I mean, the reality is that we, you know, yes, the Europeans are very strict. They will tell you that they protect their consumer and they protect them highly. But they would say that they do it because that is what their consumer wants and they've got a right to protect their consumer in terms of health and safety. A recent example is the new requirement for chemicals registration and evaluation. It's a massive system which we've got to comply with because we export to them. And what we have done is we have put actively in some of the technical committees in the United Nations so that they take some of our needs into consideration. But it's quite a big challenge. Now, our chemical industry, for example, is ready to meet these demands, but they've extended it to the mining industry. Our mining industry is not so ready. So we currently hang and you know, we've tried to say take it into account and they're going to phase it in, so they're listening to what developing countries are saying. But what we're doing now is we have started a project to identify what do we need in terms of laboratories and in terms of technical infrastructure if we want to support the mining industry. And our focus is not so much on the big mining houses, but more the small miners. So I think what you're saying is very true. They are putting these barriers in, but they will justify them. They will say it's health and safety. They will say it's precautionary. It's all those nice things that they use. Also, what we are doing in SADC is important. You know, what we have done is so far we've worked hard on harmonizing standards. We're working on setting up an accreditation body for one body for all 13 other countries that doesn't have an accreditation body. Internationally, we need to now convince that community to accept this model, and we're really working hard on it together with our SADC partners. And what we're doing now is we want to now link the work on standards and metrology with regulations. Because you see, you've got to also have the same regulations. If we have a regulation which is different from theirs, it makes your whole industry competitive. And that's also, I mean, it would take a lot of effort of us to consult and to get to a common understanding that we all agree to one regulation. So it's a huge job that lies ahead, but I think it's something that we are starting to get ready for. You know, we've got an industry that's working with us, we've got the institution. But SADC also still needs to invest a lot of money into infrastructure. And there's currently a 40 million euro project that will roll out over the next 2 years, which will build capacity in the region.
That's good work for SADC. We must commend you, the work that you're doing with SADC. But is there any further work that you do with the rest of the developing world? Hence, we, especially those that are WTO members, is there some work so that when it is said that the developed world, or the European Union, for instance, it shouldn't be just only something from SADC, which differs from the rest of the developing countries. Is there any work that we add to it so that we must have a common voice.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's actually a lot of work that's happening with other developing regions. We have also formed our own region, the India, Brazil, South Africa Pact, the IBSA thing that's happening now in Johannesburg, where we are trying to have a common approach to a lot of the globalization challenges that we see. In Africa, when it comes to technical regulations and standards arena, what we have been pushing for is for regional blocs to come together and then harmonize in that sense, that we look at COMESA, we look at West Africa, and so that they have a common approach there before we can harmonize throughout the rest of Africa. Because it has been quite taxing for our agencies to go to places like Nigeria, Ghana, and Sudan, and do work in the technical infrastructure. So it is better if it's being done on a regional basis, not just Ethiopia alone. So we have been pushing quite hard in a number of areas.
Chairperson, SAFS is a member of PACT, the Pacific Area Standards Congress. Last year, not far from here in Stellenbosch, we hosted 21 countries here, the bulk of them being developing countries, so that we are in touch with what's happening with our major trading partners, most of them are Southeast Asian countries, Latin America. We're also in
COPEN.
To deal with South American countries. And just yesterday, I hosted my counterpart from Brazil. And the idea is to strengthen those links. And it's starting to surface. You know, we managed to get, for the first time in the history of ISA, we've got 3 African members in council now. We managed to, couple of weeks ago, to get 2 additional members, Kenya and Tunisia, plus South Africa is now in ISO. And this can only be brought about if we understand each other's agendas, be in solidarity with each other, because the Europeans come voting time, they vote as a bloc and they exclude all of you. And we saw a greater increase in the governance structures of both the IEC and ISO coming from developing countries because of this collaborative effort.
Thank you very much. We're done. Is good? I think we are done for today. Thank you very much, God and your team, which is transformatory in itself, gender sensitive. Thank you very much for your presentation. Thanks, members. What we're going to do, as you know, would put in place a program whereby in the near future, we're going to embark on public hearings just to make sure that everybody, anybody, those that were consulted and those that did not go to consultation, must actually come and say something about this, and then we'll take it from there. Thank you very much for your presentation. Thanks. Meeting is adjourned. Yeah.